The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
On the Flypod.com New Media Network and coming to you from Studio Number 7, I'm your host, Gary Puckett. Welcome to our program. We're pleased to have you listening in. And we do thank our syndication and hyper-syndication partners and our sponsors and underwriters nationwide. Without this active network of support, none of our programs would be possible, folks. When you have a few minutes, visit our media site directly, www.theflypod.com. With our nationwide team of 35 show hosts, we podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Whether you're listening on your computer right now or on your portable media device, either way, we're pleased to have you joining us. You gotta believe, when it comes to the media, we are what's next. My guest in the studio today is Alex Parnuk, and he is a regular contributor and guest here on the Flypod Network. Alex, welcome back to Studio 7.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy these visits.
I enjoy these discussions as well. Before the show, we were talking about some things going on here in America and elsewhere, but I'd like to start out by talking about union labor and the situation in Wisconsin and just about 10 days ago in Michigan. Historically, a big union state, Michigan was. These states have enacted right-to-work laws. Tell me first, what's your understanding of what a right-to-work policy is?
Well, it was a couple of things. It was called Proposition 2 in the state of Michigan. Public and private employees would have a right to organize and bargain collectively through unions. This was the proposal. This law would have invalidated existing and future laws that would limit the ability to join unions by individuals. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, it would override state laws that regulate hours and conditions of employment, which would be in conflict with a bargaining agreement. And lastly, it would have defined employee, okay, this is the critical one, as a person or entity employing one or more employees. So it would fall within the bargaining agreements depending. Example would be you have a small business and you have to hire somebody else to come into that business and say do some cutting of meat or do some packaging and things like that. There's probably some service unions, SEIU, that he could belong to, and that person could actually belong to the union. Well, the ironic thing is here's Michigan, a state that is a – heavily unionized state. And what they did is they said no to this thing, okay, mm-hmm. by a significant margin. They said no, 2.57 million to 1.85 million in the state of Michigan. And what's important here is you have to understand that this is something that's going on. Look at Indiana, right to work. Look at Wisconsin, got right to work. Now Michigan is going that route. The unions are truly upset about this. And the day that the governor of Michigan, Rick Snyder, was to sign this, they brought in 10,000 people into the front of the Capitol building at Lansing to protest this thing, okay? And, of course, the media was there and everything. And what's really kind of funny, it puts me in a place where I look at unions and says, well, they've always been the protectors of the rights of the people. And yet in this particular case, when there was a group out there that was protesting against them, they literally started fist fights. And, of course, the media didn't cover this one very well. In the same instance, there was one particular instance they had. There was an organization that set up a tent, okay? And in this tent, they provided food and things like that for people that were there. And inside that tent, there was a fella by the name of Clint Tarver. They call him the hot dog guy in Lansing, Michigan. He had a food cart. When this particular case, he brought in his material, his equipment that he needed for making hot dogs and stuff like this. Well, by the time the union guys got over it, they knocked down the tent. And while they were talking to this fella, calling him the N-word. I mean, this is the kind of stuff. These are just plain union thugs are out of control that when they aren't getting what they want.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think they were from actually the state of Michigan? Or
Well, they bring them in from other places. They don't answer the question. I saw a clip. I says, if somebody wants it, they can go on and Google this thing, and there's a whole bunch of clips out there. These guys won't answer questions.
Well, it's my understanding that depending on who you talked to that it averages anywhere from 14% to 20% of the workforce is unionized.
Oh, it's less than that. It's less than that now. Yeah, it's less than that. Now, the 14% might be in various types of governments, but my understanding, it's close to 7% are unionized in the United States now.
In the commercial sector?
In the private sector, and getting smaller and smaller as we speak.
You know, it used to be that unions were
Industries. In your big industries, like your automobile industries, your steel industry, your construction trade, Teamsters. I mean, the guys that drive the trucks. And look at this example we just have recently where the company that was producing Ho-Hos and Twinkies went out of business. And the lunacy of that is the fact the driver pulls up to the back of the plant and wants to put these things on and deliver them to the stores. Well, if it was bread, he could deliver it, or if it was Twinkies, he could deliver it, but the two could not mix because of what the Teamster said. Now, this is stupidity, and this is the kind of stuff that is driving the union out the door.
Well, where do you believe this leaves the unions, and what do you think the future holds?
They're in a lose-lose position because as the economy is contracting, and I'd like to find an economist to tell me that it's not contracting, but as the economy is contracting, what you're finding is that your union position will be less and less. And that what's going to happen is the fact that less and less employees will be joining the union. Now, the biggest growth has been in the government sector. And that's where SEIU, the National Treasury Union, is growing. But eventually, let's face it, somewhere along the way with the situation in government and the amount of money that's being spent, it's going to have to compress.
Well, I want to shift gears here. You know, today is the day the world is supposed to come to an end, according to some mythical belief based on the Mayan lunar cycle or calendar or whatever. And I really don't want to talk about that. I just bring it up. But I do want to ask you about the fiscal cliff here in the United States. Yesterday, House Speaker John Boehner brought Plan B up for a vote, and it was shot down by his own party. What do you suppose was so wrong with Plan B that the Republicans voted it down?
Well, because of the very fact that he was compromising with the commander-in-chief and taxing those people as the producers. So the Republicans, especially those that held out, had said, look, no new taxes. So if that's the case, they have to go back to their constituents and tell their constituents, look, I violated what I told you I was going to do. And there was enough of them that were held to their convictions, and they said no. And he could not put enough people together to get this thing to go through.
Well, some reported that the blame could be laid squarely on the Tea Party members who voted it down because it did involve tax increases.
I don't think you can blame it just on the Tea Party. In fact, I think a lot of senators might have voted against it because of the very fact, look, Harry Reid said he wasn't going to be brought up anyway, so why bother? You know, I'm in Rand Paul's, so to speak, corner on this stuff. He says, you know what? If they're so hell-bent to do this kind of stuff, let them all go do it. You know, every single Republican that has any kind of conviction and has told his constituents that he will not vote for new taxes, he will sit back and say, well, I'm present. And then you guys take the vote and you take the blame for what's going on.
So are we going to go over? There's no fiscal cliff.
Oh, no. There will not be a fiscal. We talked about this a couple of weeks.
I didn't believe it then.
Well, but I used that analogy of the fiscal slide. Uh-huh. And this is what we got is we have a fiscal slide. They are going to turn around and guess what? They're going to take that proverbial can and they're going to kick it down the street. And we're not going to have anything go on probably maybe like February. What's problematic here is the very fact that those tax cuts that were legislated under George Bush and those tax rates are ending as of December 31st.
Okay, so what keeps those things from kicking in?
They're going to kick in if they don't pass some kind of legislation.
So it will go over the cliff.
Yeah, but it's not really a cliff. Think about it this way. A cliff is something that is really drastic. What this amounts to is the fact that when people get – I would like my friends that are pensioners, so to speak, okay? And I tell them, I says, oh, look at that, 1.some% we got a raise. Well, I says, well, wait till you get your Medicare bill because what you're going to see, that's gone up a lot. So it's not a cliff when you have less to work with at the beginning of the month. When you get your paycheck and you only have so it's the same thing with the general public that's out there paying taxes and working hard. What's going to happen is they're going to have less in their paycheck and they're going to sit around and say, the wife is going to turn around and say to her husband, hey, honey, we don't have as much money to work with. And he'll say, you know what? We got to find out. And then people are going to start talking about this. So it's not really a cliff. It's just people are going to have to adjust.
Well, is it fair to say it's going to be a rude awakening?
Oh, I think so. Because right after that in February, March, comes that date where they were going to have to authorize and raise the debt limit. because that's what they did last time. They raised the debt limit. So this time
they're
going to
raise
it.
Gosh, that was quite a fiasco.
It was, and it's going to be another one because of the very fact that, look, right now, what is it? They're paying maybe 1-point-some percent on this debt. What happens when the American economy is downgraded? So it's going to cost more money to borrow this money. So that means it's going to go up. We're already paying 41 cents out of a dollar for interest.
Debt service?
Yeah, for interest is 41 cents on a dollar. I mean, you talk to any reasonable person, and they'll let you can't operate like this.
Well, I think they would agree even if they were unreasonable.
Well, Bernanke will just print more money, and that's the scary part. QE3 we talked about.
But the whisper on the street is that when he leaves, Geithner's going to take over.
Yeah.
Do you think it'll happen?
Well, he couldn't even do his own taxes. What are you talking about?
But that's beside the point. You don't have to be qualified to have these jobs, obviously.
Oh, it's scary.
I think you and I could do them.
Well, you know, but no one in Congress wants to address these systematic problems of the congressional budgeting system, okay? If you and I ran our family budgets like these guys, because look, think about it this way. It's all of this mumbo jumbo. Okay, right now, the government's working under continuing resolution. What happens there is the very fact that it says, oh, we'll just let it roll for another year. And what they do when they roll for another year, they keep the same appropriate, meaning that every agency increases their budget by 5%. So then they say, oh, well, we'll cut back by a percent or two, but they're still increasing by three. So every year, government grows by that certain percentile. Well, you can't possibly manage a family or a government budget through this methodology.
Yeah, pretty gamey. You know, I wanted to ask you about the latest word from Tijuana, Mexico, where a U.S. Marine has been held in jail since August, actually. The word is that he may be released early next week, and it's purely conjecture, I'm sure. But what's your take on this situation, and why was he locked up in the first place?
Well, this poor guy tried to obey the law, okay? He's an ex-Marine. He spent a couple of tours in the Middle East.
And I think
what
those
was going
who have
on
served
is he,
there would ref- he, correct you and say former Marine.
Yeah, former Marine. but he was on his way down to, from what I understand, Costa Rica, and they were going to do some shooting, okay? And that's not uncommon. I've had good friends of mine that have gone south to Mexico, to various places, Argentina, to go shooting, and there's a procedure you use when you want to bring your own gun. And what this guy had his dad, I guess his grandpa's shotgun, and he went to the customs officials at American side. He registered and everything, and he asked them what to do, and they told him supposedly to just make sure you tell the Mexican officials. Well, what they didn't tell him was, and he didn't do the research, was that he should have done this at the embassy to get a permission slip, so to speak, from Mexico. So when he walks up to the Mexican and says, here, I've got this gun and I want to register, we're going yada yada yada, next thing you know, they arrest this guy. And it's purely, I mean, they were just going to try to get some money out of it, but it escalated. And it got out of hand.
So the corruption blew up in their face, and now here we are.
And so here we are. This poor guy is sitting in a jail and can't do anything because originally all they were going to do is try to get some money out of the guy because he's an American. And now it's become an international situation.
But isn't this a matter for the State Department? I mean, where are they?
Yeah, Hillary. Don't forget, she is suffering from concussion. She can't testify.
Oh,
she can't possibly do anything. But, you know, what's really funny, a friend and I, just today we were talking about this. I'm not lying. Honest to goodness, a buddy of mine used to work for customs, and we were sitting around chit-chatting back and forth. And I says, you know, in the old days, when I was down on the border, we used to have, you know, guys would have problems across the border, so to speak. And my boss and I would take a run down into TJ, and we'd go talk to the judiciales, and we'd say, hey, we got to get rid of this guy. Many a time we'd pull a Marine out of there or an Army guy, and we'd get him back because we found out about it. And we have friends, so to speak, and it says, you know, do us this favor, this thing, you know, and we get the kid out of there, and there wouldn't be any problems, and it would be done. This is one of those cases where there should have been a telephone call from Obama to Nieto, who was the new president, and say, hey, look, guy, we got this Marine. You got to get him out here because it's bad PR for us and all that. And it's not happened. The president cares less about this guy than he does about all these other things that are going on. And then to add insult to injury, then we had another shooting in Mexico with the female singer that they found out that the gun that was used in this particular instance was a gun that was originally sold by one of the he was the assistant special agent in charge of the Phoenix office for this Fast and Furious stuff. So we have another gun there. To add in more insult to injury, me and my buddy are talking. He says, you know, if he and I had done this, there's a form, 4473, and he provided false information on this when he got rid of the gun because he sold it. But I don't understand it. You know, there are 70 members of Congress now that have gotten together. They've written a letter to Hillary Clinton and Department of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, saying, look, guys, you got to do something to get this guy out of here.
Maybe it'll get resolved.
I'm hoping. I wish he would come home for Christmas. Look, this is a major trading partner of ours. We buy oil from them. You would think that in this particular case, with this much media coverage, the president could have gone on her and called his buddy and says, look, let this guy out, will you? And we'll fix something up for you later on. But this is just stupidness, what's going on. It's an inept State Department. Yeah. Simple as that.
Well, I want to talk to you about the absolutely horrific mass murders committed last week in Newtown, Connecticut at the Sandy Hook Elementary School, where they had obviously a totally deranged and mentally sick individual go out of control and kill small, innocent little children, as you well know, and some adults. Beyond your obvious human reaction of compassion for the families, what do you make of this situation?
Well, the government, the liberals, the Obama administration, the Democratic senators and congressmen and the liberal media are all trying to turn it into a gun issue. And I don't care what anybody says. This is not a gun issue. I've always stood on the side.
Gallup did a poll immediately following this to assess where the American people stood on this. The poll came out yesterday, and gun laws and addressing the gun law issue was number four.
Well,
it wasn't at the top.
I guess the Americans are smarter.
You mean the people?
Well, yeah, Americans, okay. The people, the public, they're smarter than all these politicos and everything else.
Well, you know, along those lines, do you think the media's common use, they banter around the word and use it commonly, the term assault weapon is appropriate? I mean, any weapon is an assault weapon when it's in the hands of a mentally ill person acting out. I mean, it doesn't make any difference.
If you go to the book and try to get a designation as far as what an assault weapon is with regard to going through ATF, you come up with so many different categories of what it's supposed to do, what it can't do. It is a mumbo jumbo of regulations with regard to the ATF and the regulations relating to these types of weapons. That being the case, I still go back to the fact that we're missing the point. Okay, and the point is that if you go back historically with regards to who's been causing these types of incidents, it's been mentally deranged individuals. And then you say, well, why all of a sudden?
Well, who should be the first line of defense on this?
Well, the first line of defense should be the parents, of course. And the story is still developing. In this particular case, the story is developing what happened in this particular situation. Supposedly, the mom had been trying to put this kid in some kind of an institution or getting him evaluated, but it's very difficult to do, okay? And it goes back systemically all the way back to the 1960s. I mean, it goes right back to my era, the hippy-dippies, because back in that era, what was going on is there were studies being done. It goes all the way back to Eisenhower, to Kennedy, and Johnson. And in fact, I did a little research.
Well, they were deinstitutionalizing.
Well, that's what happened in the 50s.
Emptying.
Do you remember the movie The Cuckoo's Nest? One flew over the cuckoo's nest? This is a response. That was a response, the movie industry's response to what was going on in the mental institution. That there was abuse, mm-hmm. there was mass chaos in these institutions, and so what they did back in this period, they did a study and they found out that they could do things differently, and this is exactly when these psychotropic drugs were being introduced to be able to control these individuals. So what happened is back in the 60s, liberalism looked at the situation vis-a-vis the politicians that were liberal, and they says, oh, we can fix this stuff. And what they did is they had a mental health law project in the 60s, which precipitated a lot of this stuff that was going on. And what they did is they sold the idea that through combinations of medications and community mental health centers, they would be sufficient, adequate care for these types of individuals, and they dumped them out of the mental institutions. In fact, they dumped them out of them so bad that the last figures I saw today, we have only one bed as compared to 20 beds back in the 60s. So there's no place to put these kids. When they set up these community mental health centers through a law that was passed by Johnson back in 1965, they set these things up to take the people that were supposedly coming out of these institutions. But what's happened recently is that the states have fallen behind because of funding and things and not enough money for some of these projects. I mean, we throw away $1 million to have new energy systems with solar and with wind, and yet the institutions that really need the help in the communities in the states aren't given any money at all. In fact, they drop a lot of support for those industries.
Well, You know, I think anybody listening, and you and I included as well, I mean, this is obviously an unconscionable act. It's beyond belief, really. But if this mass murderer, as he was, would have been acting out with a sword, a chainsaw, a baseball bat, or heck, even a rock, would the media have responded the way they did?
The media is on the side of anti-gun. Simple as that. I don't think they would have because of the very fact their issue is always the gun. I mean, there was a statistic that the FBI put out that there's actually more people killed with baseball bats. Now, do we see us going after people with baseball bats? Of course not. Same thing. Look at the mayhem that occurs with vehicular homicide. Are we going to be outlaw our cars? Look, it's not the vehicle. It's not the gun. It's not the bat. It's not the knife. It's the individual that gets this crazy idea in his head that he's going to harm someone. And until we finally approach that subject and come up to some kind of a resolution, I mean, since this has happened, there have been lots of people.
She should have had those things in a safe.
Well, I mean, we don't know. We don't know exactly what happened.
And maybe she did.
The investigation, maybe she did. Who knows?
Yeah.
But the point of the matter is, when you have a child that's like that, it's difficult like that. And this was a child for this woman because it was her 20-year-old son. She was trying to do things, and apparently the system was not in favor of helping her. I do this advocacy where we just had a child just recently that acted out, became violent. The people that were taking care of this child had to call the sheriff's department to transport her back to a facility. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the kinds of real-life situations that occur on a daily basis, and you have to recognize these things and address them. And the only thing the media is concerned about, and our Congress and our president, is guns. I mean, what a waste of time.
Well, my heart does pain for these families, and one can only hope that they can gradually heal from this tragic episode in their lives. It's just it's hard to get your head around. But I am truly troubled by how old media jumps on, I'll just call, news they can exploit. I'm sorry, that really bothers me. Well, Alex, before we close up the show, do you have any final comment?
You know, our friend Thomas Jefferson used a quote from a fellow by the name of Cesare Beccaria, who was an old-time guy back in the Roman times, an Italian, and he wrote this thing called On Crimes and Punishment, and Jefferson used it. And this, the quote is such, in order that any punishment should not be an act of violence committed by one person or many against a private citizen, it is essential that it should be public, prompt, and necessary, the minimum possible under the given circumstances, proportionate to the crimes and established by law. What we're talking about here is punishment severity should be based primarily on the harm of the offense and rather than the intent of the offender. You know, Jefferson says, look, how many times has he talked about the very fact that we have to protect our right, our Second Amendment right to the right to bear arms? I don't care if it's in a school, in a restaurant, or in a public place. If that principal would have been packing, if that assistant principal would have had a gun that after he heard the noises happening or saw the principal go down, or if it was a teacher that was walking by, or anyone in the building could have responded to that situation and we wouldn't have had this happen. Let's face it, some of these kids are cowards. And if they even know that that's going on, that would have a tendency of keeping them from doing something silly, something like this and causing this great. I mean, it's a tragedy.
It certainly.
But it's a tragedy that is precipitated by an individual, not by a gun.
Well, Alex, I appreciate you coming into the studio. And listeners, I want you to remember this. The FlyPod Media Network extends an open invitation to any citizen to come on our show, America Speaks Out, regardless of their political affiliation or point of view. Our network is truly neutral. So regardless of where you're contacting us from in America, we'll have you on the show and podcast it directly into your specific geographic community. This impressive and amazing flexibility is made possible through our nationwide network of program feeds or channels. So to come on our show and have your voice heard, simply drop an email directly to us in our main control studio, shout@theflypod.com, and we'll take it from there and arrange to have you on the program. Again, my guest has been Alex Parnuk, and from Studio Number 7, I'm your host, Gary Puckett, coming to you free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of www.theflypod.com. If you have any comments, suggestions, questions, or even complaints, leave your comments directly on the show page that is likely displayed in front of you at this very moment. Or if you choose the old-fashioned way, you can email them to us in the main production studio. Again, shout@theflypod.com. We hear from our listeners all the time, and we do appreciate the feedback. From Studio Number 7, until next time, thank you so much for joining us here on America Speaks Out. And remember, when it comes to the media, we are what's next.